Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What do you think those dead friends of yours would like the version of you that you've become? To be honest, like, do you think you're doing them any service by behaving this way? The answer is obviously no.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, Chris Van Zandt. You are a former Tier 1 operator, and now you kind of just hang out, right?
Really, just hang out all the time. That's what I do.
Well, let's get into some of this stuff. So I always ask this question of anybody that was in the military. What made you decide to join up? Because I think you got in before 9/11, right?
I did, yeah. 1995, straight out of high school. My answer, I mean, it's pretty simple. Not unlike a lot of folks, I think I needed some structure. I wanted the challenge of the military. I thought it had a lot of things that were very appealing to me. But kind of more importantly was I grew up with two grandfathers that were World War II vets. And I was the youngest of all the grandchildren. And my grandfather on my mom's side, I kind of got him at a time of his life. He was older and he actually started to share some stories from World War II. And when he talked about it, whether he was telling a good story or a bad story or a sad story or a happy story, he sort of always talked about his time in the service with such reverence. And so my only frame of reference about the military was from his combat time in World War II and the fact that he spoke so highly of it and all the people that he was involved with and his mates. I think it just appealed to me and it stuck with me. And it's probably the major reason why I joined.
Yeah, there's I think a big part of, you know, coping, I guess, with all the sacrifice and stress over the time is knowing that what you did was worthwhile. And that's been a bit of a problem for our generation. Because, you know, people have been talking about this lately, actually, in social media and shit. But the idea that troops fight for American freedom used to be kind of like an assumption. And now I don't know that you can make that assumption. Right. I guess it's not fair to say that troops don't fight for that, because we do. That's what we care about for sure, is each other and the idea of America and shit like that. But the way we are used, isn't always reflective of our intent. Right. Like the way that command uses us is not, it's very rarely actually reflective of our intent anymore. And I wonder, like, you've been through a lot of this bullshit and you work now with All Secure Foundation, with Tom and Jen, and, you know, you run into these things a lot. I wonder from your perspective, how big a role you think that plays, and how can somebody who, you know, spent time in Iraq or watched Afghanistan fall a couple years ago, and like, how are they supposed to fucking deal with that now?
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, and I've said this many a time, but, you know, as a service member, you're an extension of US foreign policy. You sign up for a job where, essentially politicians are going to, make decisions, hopefully based on the wants and desires of the American people, but politicians are going to make decisions that inevitably can put you in harm's way. I think The thing that rings true is without that, without service members, we probably wouldn't exist as a country today. And there's some inherent nobility in service that will never go away. You know, support and defend the Constitution, and make sure that the fight never comes to our soil, I think is something that's never going to go away. So, for me, you know, talking to the next generation, whether we're at war or we're in peacetime, I think the military will not do anything bad for you, even if you do a short stint. I think serving your country, again, there's some inherent nobility in that. And I think what you will find is it will make you a better person. It will definitely become about the man or woman on your left and your right. And I think that's okay. So whether you decide to do 20 or whether you decide to do whatever the shortest contract is now, 3 years and out or 2 years and out or whatever it is now, I think you stand to gain something from it, and understand the world in a little larger context. And then whatever you choose to do post-service, I think it's going to impact your decisions and your thought process for the rest of your life, which I think is good for society as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's usually the case that going through some crazy bullshit can, you know, you get to decide if it's going to be a benefit or a torment, I guess, for you, you know. And guidance certainly helps. It's not like we figure this out all on our own, but it is ultimately up to the individual to kind of decide how they're going to, like, are you someone who things happen to, or are you the main character in your life? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's no surprise to me that the more reflective on our own condition we've been over the past, let's say 30, 40 years, the more anxious and depressed people have gotten. You know what I mean? It's like we're not built to sit around and think about how we are feeling. As a matter of fact, the great philosophies in Western literature aren't about self-reflection. They're about personal responsibility, right? If you look at the Stoics, they're about managing yourself. They're about delayed gratification and being useful to other people. But now I don't know necessarily why it happened, because relatively speaking, we've been comfortable as human beings before, right? Especially like patrician classes and things like that. But it seems like this latest iteration of it is just staring in the mirror and like, who am I? Like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Go chop some fucking firewood or something. You know what I mean? It's like, what a useless fucking endeavor that is.
Completely agree. Yeah, I mean, not to go back, but like I said, I mean, I was influenced by the Greatest Generation, and I still believe they are so to this day. And, you know, my grandfather, there wasn't peacetime experience in the service. It was all wartime. And he was proud of that. It's something that stuck with him for 50, 60 years post service. And the man wrote a memoir at the end of his life that never got published, but, you know, the family has it. And he talked about all the things that happened throughout the course of his life, you know, being born in 1911 and passing away in the 90s, late 90s. But the thing that resonated most with him was his time serving his country during a world war. And yeah, I think that's something that we need to pay attention to, and we need to cultivate, and we need to remind young folks that that the liberties and freedoms that you have didn't come free, and that maybe there's something more important to focus on other than yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the formative years in anybody's life is gonna, you know, obviously that's why they're called formative, but they're gonna inform the rest of your life. That it becomes your identity, I guess. And you know, we kind of grow from boys into men by serving others and doing so in ways that are extreme, that are often quite dangerous to our physical and mental health. And then, you know, I think a lot of people fall into this trap afterwards, like you're tired. It is exhausting to be in the military, to be honest, even if you're not a shooter. It can be exhausting for people, just that, you know, the constant, it's like being a fucking mailman or something, you know what I mean? It's just it's some new fresh hell every day for no reason. But you know, I think a lot of people get out or separate or whatever, and then they think that things are going to go back to the way they were before. You know what I mean? I think that is a nasty little trap you can fall into, to think that things are going to, well, you know, because for the vast majority of people, the last time you experienced non-military life, you were under the umbrella of your parents. You were still in school or something like that. At most, you were probably in college or something, right? So there was still pretty, there were a lot of guardrails in place. And now you're just out there. And I knew this. This was the case for myself. I just, after being in the 82nd for a while, I just wanted a break. You know what I mean? I didn't want to run 5 miles through Area J for any ever again, right? You know what I mean? Although it was probably good for me, but I just felt like I needed some time off, and I think that was a mistake, to be honest. Maybe like a week, a vacation, like a real vacation, and then get back to it. But you know, you become a different person when your life is so regimented and so like it's, if you're doing it right, everything you do while you're in the military is in the service of other people. Right. And I mean that down to your daily tasks. Like I'm eating the right kind of food and I'm working out to make sure I'm fit enough to make sure the dudes around me don't get fucked up when we go out there. You know what I mean? And then you get out into the regular world. And if you don't already have a family, then it gets super tough, man. It's like, well, what am I doing any of this for anymore? And I think that's been a big problem for folks.
Yeah, I one of the things that I say all the time for guys that get out of the service, whether you did 4 years or you did 20, is reestablish a new routine. And it goes even before the service. You know, like you said, when you're under the roof of your parents, there is a level of routine that exists within your life. When you go in the military, it gets exacerbated, right? Like you have to be at an X place at X appointed time. You know, don't be late, don't be light, don't be out of uniform. And so that gets ingrained in you in the service. And so when you leave, regardless of how many years you've spent there, if you don't reestablish a new, somewhat healthy routine, you will flounder and you will struggle mentally. For me, you know, retiring after 20 years of service, that was one of the most critical things to my mental health. Was I'd been through some challenges, I had experienced some trauma, I had some physical and some mental health issues, but reestablishing a healthy routine was the thing that sort of gave me that base, that structure to build off of, and I think it's critically important. And you're right, it's one of the first things that sort of cuts the legs out from under you is, well, what do I do now? Why do I matter now? And to your point, I don't know that, you know, for me, it's simpler than, you know, maybe you don't have a family. Maybe it's just you as an individual, but, you know, maintaining a healthy lifestyle, getting up, going and exercising in some form or fashion, eating 3 squares a day, establishing a bedtime for yourself, as silly as it sounds, but establishing a regular sleep pattern or a time that you go to sleep. And then addressing all those baseline health issues, I think, are absolutely critical post-service.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the baseline health stuff. So I always say that we have both a hardware and a software issue. You know what I mean? And I don't think there's anything you can do to the software that's going to make a dent until you deal with traumatic brain injury and you deal with heavy metals and you deal with your testosterone, which is kind of downstream of those two. But we're fucked testosterone wise. Like, I don't know I don't know when you decided to start getting checked or if you have or whatever the fuck, but when I did, it was maybe 2 years after I got out, well, a year and a half after I got out, and my levels were like 165. I'm like, oh, is that bad? And he's like, yeah, that's like a dead dude, basically. I'm like, oh, sweet. All right. Well, that's probably should look into that. But yeah, I mean, like that's the advice I always give people is you got to get the hardware fixed. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what kind of code you're running. It's not going to perform. And, you know, then I feel like things get quite a bit easier once that hardware is fixed because you can start being rational again. You know, I mean, having your head all banged up and low T and shit like that, you're basically perpetually a woman with PMS, right? Like, for real, that's kind of how it operates. You're just like emotional and fucked up in the head all the time, but it doesn't suit you. You know what I mean? That's not who you are as a person. So it can get fucking pretty challenging there. And I guess one of the things that I hear you talking about is like how to reset yourself post-military. And there's, again, hardware and software ways to do this. It is true that certain plant medicines, cold plunges, et cetera, can help reset your limbic system, get rid of the fight or flight overstimulation that you've been experiencing and stuff like that. And then, of course, there's software stuff as well. How have you been successful in your own life about, like, you talked about creating new routines, but I think that's part of it, certainly, but there's way more to that issue. It's like you have to take this new person, this identity that you are now, and map it back on to a world instead of just being a gunfighter, you know what I mean?
And fit into that world. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So for me, I had some baggage as it relates to regular medicine, right? So in 2010, and for anybody that's listening, I'm very candid about this because I'm a bunch of years removed and because I've learned to be candid about it, and I'm okay with where I've been in the past and where I am now. And I think it's important to share some of these things so people to hear people talk candidly about them and be frank. But, you know, I almost took my life in 2010. I was still in the service. I had left a special mission unit. I just had all kinds of things going on. I was self-medicating with alcohol. I was addicted to prescription pain pills. I had an identity crisis going on from leaving something that I thought was the only thing I was ever going to be good at. I just had this perfect storm, if you will, of things that led to a low point in my life. And I was fortunate to get through that. I was fortunate to seek some assistance, to get a medical diagnosis of some of the issues that I was having both mentally and physiologically as a result of not just physical things that I was exposed to during my time in the service, but some of the trauma that had built up on the mental health side. And I was prescribed some prescribed some head meds, if you will, at the time. And I was seeing a military counselor, and, you know, head meds, if you've never taken them, depending on what you're on and the level of what you're on, they generally speaking, they start you very small, to gauge the impacts, and it kind of builds up in your system, but you will see positive effects. And I did, and I felt good. And then an accident happened, a human error, 30 days after taking prescription head meds, and going to counseling and therapy while I was still in, they quadrupled my dose, which led to a manic episode, basically, where I almost took someone else's life and then probably my own shortly thereafter. But because I had been through what I had been through, and because I knew something wasn't right, and because I had someone around me that knew something wasn't right, I sort of cut it off at the pass, and I made a phone call to a doc, and I said, "Hey, here's all the things that are going on." And luckily for me, he asked a few questions, and he realized that I had been prescribed way more than the dose that I was originally prescribed, and that was causing my issue. So that trauma, for lack of a better term, put me off of medication for a long time. Honestly, it put me off of therapy for a long time because I felt sort of betrayed, even though it wasn't his fault. He had nothing to do with it. It was a pharmaceutical error. The joke, we all make jokes at inappropriate times, but if I was a civilian, I'd have been a millionaire, right? Mm. If that had happened at a CVS or a Walgreens, I could have sued them for millions of dollars because I could have killed myself or someone else, but I was in the service, and it just is what it is. But that led to a realization of I've got to come up with some alternative means to work through some of my issues and to get better. And that sort of culminated when I retired. My wife asked me, "Hey, you know, what do you want to do? Like, do you want to take a vacation? Do you want to go somewhere? Do you want to do something?" And I knew what she meant, but I think I mentally was like, I need a break. I need a line of demarcation between I just spent 20 years and 6 days in the military, and now I'm going to transition to civilian life and a civilian career. Like, I don't even know how I'm going to fit in this world. I need something to like process this. And we chose time in the wilderness. We chose to hike the John Muir Trail. Although I was 5 years into my recovery from near suicide in 2010 to retiring in 2015, and things were going fairly decently, I was off prescription meds. I wasn't heavily self-medicating with alcohol. I literally was doing well, but I was still an insomniac. I'd been an insomniac for about 5 years, and anybody that's ever had trouble with sleep, whether it's sleep apnea or whether you just have flat-out insomnia from whatever other issue, you know that it's damn near impossible to address anything else if you have sleep problems and you're not getting enough rest. And I was still there in 2015. So we went out and hiked John Muir Trail, 3 weeks in the mountains in California, 226 miles. And when you wake up with the sun, you walk all day in a physically demanding environment with a pack on your life on your back, for lack of a better term, and physically exhaust yourself at altitude. And then you go to sleep when the sun goes down. If you do that for an extended period of time, you literally reset your circadian rhythm. And so after 3 weeks on the John Muir Trail, I slept like a baby. Even on the ground in a tent, I slept like a baby. So we came back from that and my wife said, "Hey, you're getting up when the sun comes up. You're going to bed when the sun goes down. It's the first time as long as I've known you that you've slept a healthy night's sleep. Let's maintain this. Let's set a new routine. Let's get up when the sun comes up. Let's go to the gym. Let's come back. Let's eat a healthy breakfast, a healthy lunch, a healthy dinner. And then let's set a normal bedtime with no TV, no distraction, no whatever." And we did that. And I got to tell you, that was however many years ago that was, 9 years ago, I have not had a sleep issue since. I've had some limited bouts with, I'm starting to have trouble when my brain goes 1,000 miles an hour when I lay down to bed, and I have some techniques to deal with that. But at the end of the day, I know if I go out and spend 3 or 4 days in the backcountry, hiking or climbing or whatever, that it will reset that for me, and I'll get right back on the normal schedule. And that for me was the biggest baseline reset that helped me start to adopt healthy habits.
This episode is also brought to you by BlackRifleCoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you know, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there. And the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience. For you can do just the plain coffee club, and if you want your 2 bags of espresso or your 2 bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those 2 bags or 1 bag or whatever you want every month, or rather you can use the ECS, the exclusive coffee club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to BlackRifleCoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something. Do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we'll go like years, decades sometimes, waking up at midnight to go do goon shit at 2-3 a.m. You know what I mean? Because we own the night, whatever the fuck the 82nd used to say. I think everybody's got night vision now, so I'm not sure if that's true anymore, but it used to be the case. But yeah, we like shit. We deployed for 15 months during the surge. We were in the Sadr City area, and I would say probably about 40-50% of the nights we were out doing raids at night, for that, for what, 400 some days, however long we were there. And yeah, your body gets very used to that. And then it's like, we would come back to garrison and nobody can sleep. Everybody's waking up at 2 a.m. and we're like, oh, I don't even know why. Like, fuck yeah, you know why. What the hell are you talking about? You've been training your body to do this forever. And, yep. You know, we do, do you know CZ, the former SEAC, Cologne Lopez?
I know who he is. We don't know each other personally.
He talks a lot about the human weapon. And this is something I've been talking about for years on this show and others. It's like you would never go into a fight with your weapon in the condition that we go into a fight with our brains in the condition. You know what I mean? Like we there is no, and you know, there, myself and some other people are working on this right now. A couple of physiologists, a couple of like military psychologists and shit, and human performance experts. But like, why do we not have there? So there's a rhythm that you treat your weapon with, right? You get a new weapon, you fucking go to the range, stretch out those springs a little bit, right? Get some carbon in there, clean it out, keep it oiled, put it away until you need it. Then there's ongoing maintenance. And then, you know, sometimes shit breaks and you fix or replace it. There's nothing like that in active military for the soldier themselves. Like that, it doesn't exist, right? And there's always the fear, and you know this to a degree that most people never will, especially when you become a team leader, team sergeant, or whatever. If you come off the line, two things happen. One, somebody else has to go out in your place, which is never a comfortable thing for a gunfighter. I don't ever want to send anybody else out in my place because that's something always goes wrong when you do that. And the second part is, you know, there's a chance that you get moved out of that position. You know what I mean? It's like the, what's his name? The guy that fucking Lou Gehrig took over for. I can't remember his name now off the top of my head. But yeah, it's like you miss a day and all of a sudden you don't have your job anymore. At least that's how it is in your head. So it's like, you know, I don't understand how after all these years of combat, we haven't figured that out yet, that there isn't some kind of, I call it an alpha cycle. It's like how an alpha male operates. We have to, if we're going to fucking work at night, then we have to structure our life around that to some degree, right? And then we have to unpack that. Once we're done doing that, we have to get ourselves back to normal. None of these things are prescribed by the one group that should be doing it, which is the military and the VA. They have no concept of any of this stuff.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot to unpack. I had mixed emotions, right? Like during my formative years when I was deploying a lot of, I was a part of a special mission unit, and that organization has a job to do. And I think they do a tremendous job of screening, evaluating, selecting the right individuals to do that job. But I think all of the science and all the psychology behind it was based on singular or even several mission sets. It wasn't based on a decade at war. So I think in essence, even at the highest level of our military in the United States, we sort of broke the mold with GWAT, in that we didn't have any science behind spending two decades at war. So on the one hand, I kind of understand and I get that they're reeling and they don't have a way to deal with it. On the other hand, I feel like you do. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's been more than a couple of years, and yeah, this has been going on a while, so why aren't we addressing it? I have always said, and this is just an opinion. It's not, I'm not a medical professional. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think operational tempo has as much to do with a lot of the issues that we've experienced trauma related as anything else. I think the ability to take time away, process, deal with, and then come back from things is something that has been woefully ignored. I think it gets a lot of lip service, but I think that's been woefully ignored. I also think that the family unit is a critical part of dealing with and recovery from a lot of the things that soldiers deal with and have dealt with in the last 20 years. And I think that nor the military, nor the civilian world, nor the VA, nor anybody else pays attention to the family unit. I don't think they give a fuck, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no the family unit. They don't consider them to be a client, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. And yeah, I 100% agree with you, and I've done years and years of research on this stuff. Prolonged exposure to extreme stress is what fucks your limbic system up, right? It's what keeps fight or flight turned on all the time. Yep. And if you think about it in terms of like EMDR psychotherapy or something like that, they'll give you a scale from negative 10 to positive 10. And that's where you are in the emotional range, right? And people, there are certain people who stay at 8, certain people who stay at negative 8. And it takes a lot to get them going, or it takes a lot, or it doesn't take very much to get them completely off the rails. And that's what that is, right? Like you're out of rhythm, I guess, if you want to call it that, with your limbic system and your circadian rhythm as well. And I think, especially for high op tempo groups, but I think this is, I think this should be true for anybody that deploys. And it's part of the program that I'm working on now. Part of the redeployment package, if you want to call it that, is something like what you're talking about, taking all the guys out and doing some, leave the guns at home and go out into the fucking woods and try to reset your systems a little bit. And then some kind of family style retreat as well. And look, we're talking about a weekend here and a weekend there. It's something like typically if you go during the height of the GWAT, if you go on long deployments, you're getting like 14 to 30 days of leave when you get back anyways. We should probably make some use of that, because I don't know how many times I've been called back. Like, you don't want to be the guy who stays in town during leave. I would take leave sometimes just to get the fuck out of Bragg, because I didn't want to get called back every time some asshole got a DUI or whatever, right? But yeah, that's definitely a part of our thinking. That, call it what you want. I guess we most often refer to it as decompression, but I don't know if decompression is the right word for it. Decompression kind of assumes that it's a tea kettle and it's getting ready to whistle, right? I don't think it's that. I think it is a reset of your brain. Like, you just have to get back to being a normal person again.
Yeah. The leave post deployment is kind of a comical thing, because right, as decades of war go on, and as you live the adrenaline cycle of combat for year after year after year, there's no decompression. You're more stressed to come home than you are when you're deployed. Like, deployed is simpler. You have a common goal with the people around you, and that is solely your focus. When you come home, there's kids, there's family, there's all these other dynamics that fuck with you that you have a hard time dealing with. So the block leave post-deployment makes me laugh. I agree with you. There needs to be some formal process to help folks get a level of true decompression in an environment that is non-hostile, to allow you to rebalance all of your levels internally. And I think there's a bunch of ways to do that. I don't think it requires a bunch of overthinking. The reason I share the outdoor story is that's how simple it was for me, man. Like, I just got back from a climbing trip with my wife. And I still do that to this day when I've just had enough and I need a break. I do a reset and I get away from everything. I cut the cell phone out, no social media, no alcohol, no drugs. Like, I remove myself from all of those distractors, to reset. And then I come back healthy and happy and like ready to take on the day. And it works for me.
Yeah. It's so crazy, man. I mean, I was in a gunfight on a Thursday in right around Solder City, and then Sunday I was driving my car down Bragg Boulevard. I'm like, and I remember thinking to myself, like, this is fucking stupid. Like, this, anything can happen right here. Why the fuck is this a thing? And you know, look, I know we ask a lot of people, and it feels, I'm sure everybody wants to get home and see their family, right? And it feels probably even to the most high and tight haircut first sergeant, it still feels kind of shitty to keep people there after they've been deployed for, you know, 6, 9, 12 months, whatever. But the fact that we get in, check in all of our sensitive items to the arms room, and then immediately sign out on leave,
to me is bananas. Like, that's crazy, man. You're just like, especially with, like, maybe it works in some units, I don't know, but cutting a bunch of paratroopers loose on the town like that is just fucking, you're asking for trouble, man. It never goes well. Because we're still in that LGOP, we're still in that little group of paratrooper mindset. We go out in teams and like, oh, somebody starts some shit, we're going to fight. Like, why? Dude, we just got done fighting. Why the fuck are we back here looking for a fight?
Just as a frame of reference, like for your listeners and guys or gals that maybe think they're the only ones, I'm not going to give you my opinion on the movie or the book or the individual, but when I watched the movie American Sniper, Chris Kyle comes home from a deployment and instead of going to his house, he goes to the bar. That scene in that movie, all those years later, had a psychological impact on me. It brought me to tears. And it brought me to tears because I was that guy, because I actually did that, because I didn't know how to turn that switch off. Like you said, 2 days ago, I was shooting a dude in Solder City, and today I'm driving my car in the normal world, or I'm taking my kids to school, or whatever it is, man. Like that scene in that movie brought me to that point, and I think a lot of us feel like that. So to your point, yeah, the last thing you might want is for them to make you do something when you get back from that, but it just might be something critical that you need so that you're more effective when you get home with your family.
Yeah, it's I've tried to tell people this in the past, and I don't know if there's I'm not sure if there's a real way to explain it to someone that hasn't experienced it, but you know, you get back from deployment, everybody's, you know, waving flags and hugging you and shit, and you know, it's good to see them, I guess. You know, it is a very real reminder that you're out of the danger. So there's probably some psychological benefit to that. But no matter how honorable you feel about the shit you did, and look, I've never had a problem with any shit I did. Fuck those people. You know what I mean? If you're gonna fucking try to blow me up or shoot me, I'm gonna kill you. I don't care. But you know, no matter how you feel about that, especially if you're like a father or, you know, whatever the fuck. That often feels like a different dude. That's a dude that you don't want your family to see. Not because you're embarrassed of it, because you don't want them to think of you as that fucking dude swinging the tomahawk. You know what I mean? It's not like it's just not like that anymore in our culture, I guess. And that's one of the things that I found very common about, like, there are huge differences. I've talked a lot to World War II and Vietnam vets, including my grandfather, and about the difference in combat. Like, you and I may have seen, if we were deployed for 100 days, we're seeing 80 days of combat, right? If they're deployed for a year, they may see 20 days of combat, or like actual combat. So it's different, same but different, right? And the stress that comes with it is quite a bit different as well. But I'm not sure they had, there are definitely instances where this is true, like Battle of the Bulge is a fucked up situation, and that probably fucked a lot of people's brains up. But there wasn't the same amount of prolonged exposure to extreme stress and alertness and in World War II specifically. But a lot of those guys I've talked to have intimated me when they came back. It's like, yeah, I was a fucking farmer. You know what I mean? I think it probably gets worse when it's a conscript army, right? Like, I was a farmer. I worked at a fucking soda pop factory or some bullshit. And then I'm, you know, lighting some dude up with a Tommy gun. And then, like, I don't want my family to look at me like that.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's not who I am. That's something I did. That's not who I am. And I think that particular bit of trauma for our generation is quite a bit worse, because one, it's all the violence is glorified in culture now, where it wasn't back then, right? So it's like, oh, you're a fucking badass. It's like, I guess, man, whatever, but That's just kind of, I feel like I did what I needed to do over there. And then it's like, how do I explain to somebody that that's a different, like, I can switch that dude on if I need to, But that's, I don't go around in life thinking about fucking people up. That's not how your brain is supposed to work, right?
Right. Yeah, I think I've always said, like, I'm a regular human being that was fortunate to be around some greatness throughout my career. I never felt like that person was me all the time. I actually think that was detrimental to me. The identity crisis came from forgetting who I was as a person and all the things that made me up, and solely identifying with the person I was in combat. And that created a lot of issues. So I think that's definitely one of the underlying things is how do you cultivate that balance with, being an individual capable of extreme violence and doing so on behalf of your country, and then coming home and being normal. It's a tough thing. I think first and foremost, I think sometimes we get hung up in, well, why don't they understand? Well, they don't understand because they've never been in your shoes and they don't know what that feels like, which is why we identify with fellow service members as much as we do. But if there's something that I've learned over the years is, particularly with loved ones and friends, is even though they don't understand, and I'm not saying you say everything because you and I both know some things just don't need to be said. But I think figuring out and learning how, or relearning the ability to share some of your trauma and some of your experiences and some of your frustrations, even if they don't get it, but the ability to share those with friends and loved ones and significant others, I think is one of the keys to recovery and to success in the rest of your life, post-service.
Yeah, I think there are some useful and being able to translate that stuff back into normal life for people to, you know, get a little glimpse of your person, you know, who you are as a human being, is super helpful. And I think there are some parallels. Like I think we've all experienced extreme situations. Most people have, to some degree at least. And, you know, this having to switch on and be something, I mean, you could talk to somebody that has social anxiety, be like, yeah, you know how you have to psych yourself up to get into this mood. Well, that's how I have to do to come back out, you know, to come back and be a normal person again. But I have to do it over the course of years, not just like one moment at a time. It's like and it isn't just an event once a week or once a month. It's like every day, especially if you got a family, it's like every day you got to wake up in the morning and slap yourself in the fucking face. Be like, all right, this is my responsibility. I got to do this stuff. So I think it's useful to be able to draw some of those parallels. And I also think it's useful for the vet to learn how to unpack things in a real way, backtrack on large ideas and turn them into a series of smaller ideas. And what I mean is, like, this is a practical example. When you get out, you spend a lot of time, if you're planning on getting an education afterwards, if you haven't already, you spend a lot of time learning how to translate your military service and schools into college credits or whatever, or translate them into bullet points on your resume and shit like that. But how do you reduce your identity, the good and bad parts that you've created over however many years of service? How do you reduce those down to bullet points that you can then remap onto practical life, right? Like, I'm somebody that's very calm in chaos. That's a fucking skill, man. You know what I mean? It's a very important skill too, and that not many people have, because the only way that you, I mean, some people maybe just have that, but the only way you know is if you've done it before, right? And then, you know, it's one thing to be comfortable in chaos. It's another thing to be very efficient in chaos. Be loud noises, bright flashes, and still I'm focused. I'm both hyper-focused on my target, but I'm also not getting tunnel vision, right? Like most people, especially when your adrenaline's pumping, your fucking vision goes from here all the way down to here, and that can be very dangerous for a lot of folks. So, you know, this is something, again, on the post-service thing that we really haven't coached people on doing. You know, I mean, like, you went through the retirement process, and maybe that's different than just
separating, but the information you get when you're separating from the military is like, I'm sure there's some useful stuff in there, right? But it's like, one, has it been explained to me in a way that I'm even going to give a fuck about, or is this a hurdle in my way that I have to get over so I can get the fuck out of here? And then two, is it really that useful? Because they're not addressing any of this stuff. They're just like, they want to take you from one stall that you're in, like cattle, and move you to the next stall so they can check their box.
Yeah, I understand things on both sides. Like, the military has a job to do, and when you're not doing that job anymore, they got to check the blocks to transition you out to a civilian, an American that doesn't work for the Department of Defense and do the things that they need you to do. But I think there can definitely be some work done into helping veterans to understand how they take some of their experiences and some of these skills that they've developed that are hard to put on paper, and how they translate that into civilian workforce. I always tell the story, like, you know, I grew up in the Army, and particularly in special operations too, you know, like hot washes, like after action reviews were a big part of what we do and a big part of how we learn from mistakes that were made in high stress, critical environments. And we do it in a way that you get conditioned to in the military that doesn't directly translate to the civilian workforce. So when you get out of the service and you go into in the civilian sector and work for a business, and, you know, a week goes by and something happens and you have a meeting about how things went, you have an after action review on the civilian side, and you talk like you used to talk or get talked to in the military in an AAR, people cry. And that takes a minute to get used to now, but you do have a skill set that can empower and lead people through crisis, through critical situations, through high stress situations in business. You just need some fine tuning about how to adapt that to the civilian world. And I think, yeah, that's something that we can definitely improve on in an area that we could definitely do some help or provide some help as a veteran community to active duty as folks are transitioning.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, somebody's got to do that work. And I'm sure there are probably nonprofits that work on that. I know there have been plenty of like business transition organizations for people. But
I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot out there. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, Tom Satterly and I worked together for a bunch of years. He was someone that I looked up to as a leader in the Army. A mentor, if you will. But so it was kind of a no-brainer when I was asked to join All Secure. But one of the things I like about what we do as a charity is we provide training and tools to deal with your trauma. And that doesn't necessarily mean it could be anything, man. It's coaching. It's helping you work through your own issues so that you can be value added to wherever you are in your life at that point. And it's not just you, but it's you and your spouse, because at the end of the day, you've been a part of a team your entire military career, and you're effective as a teammate. And so if even in recovery, if you don't approach it from a team mindset with you and your spouse, you're not going to be as successful, or in some cases not successful, unless you approach it with a team mindset. And that's what I loved about All Secure is we're still to this date, I don't know of any other charity that focuses on secondary post-traumatic stress as well as post-traumatic stress. And it's one of the things that really spoke to me, because my wife, my teammate is critical to my successes, my mental health, my physical health. Like, she's an integral part of all of those things. And I think people forget that.
Explain secondary post-traumatic stress.
Okay, so I'll give you the knuckle-dragger version.
That's what our audience will appreciate, so that's good.
I deployed 11 times to combat. I spent a decade of my life going overseas and coming back. Exactly what you said earlier. On Tuesday, I shot somebody in the fucking face. And on Thursday, I was home and I was reading a book to my two little girls, or I was going to Target with my two little girls, trying to be dad and reintegrate in the family unit. Secondary post-traumatic stress is the experiences of your significant other in dealing with you coming back from those experiences and those times deployed. And in some cases, it's worse than post-traumatic stress that the veteran experiences from combat or from trauma. Imagine when you're deployed, everything is on a schedule. You do X, Y, and Z by this time. You have this briefing. You do this after action review. Everybody does their job. Everything in a good scenario, everything flows exactly like it should. And all of those things are critical to your survival and the person next to your survival. Well, you do that for enough years, you start applying that mindset to things in your house. So you didn't do the fucking dishes. You didn't put this blanket back right. You didn't do this thing correctly. Your brain doesn't know the difference because your fight or flight is activated, even in these little minuscule scenarios, because chemically you're off from all these years of trauma. Your brain feels like it's life or death. So you react accordingly. Well, imagine being that person on the other side of that. That's secondary post-traumatic stress. It can literally alter their behavior and their life and how they interact with the world just dealing with you, the veteran that comes home with that shit year after year after year. And it's something that, for the most part, has been completely ignored. And again, I'm not going to put this on DOD because they have a job to do, right? But as veteran organizations, is something that we should absolutely be paying attention to. Look at the divorce rate in the military. That's a perfect example of the fact that we paid no attention to it whatsoever.
Yeah, so a practical example is like a vet's wife who seems elevated, bitchy, anal about shit that doesn't really matter. That's kind of their version. That's their expression of post-traumatic stress, I guess, would be a way to say that. And then we see that and we're like, oh, she's just a bitch. You know what I mean? It's like, what if somebody at your weakest moment was like, oh, he's just an asshole, you know what I mean? And never thought like, well, okay, let's maybe look into this and see what's going on and try to help him. That seems kind of fucking stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, think about it growing up. Like you and I are probably, I don't know, we're probably relatively close in age, but our fathers, our grandfathers, I used to walk on eggshells around your dad because you never knew your dad was going to get mad at you about whatever. Imagine that to like the 11th power and what that would do to your psyche over time, particularly a lot of years. And then there's also the guilt associated with, well, I can't say anything because he's lost all these friends, or he's had all this trauma, or she's had all this, or she's lost all these friends, or whatever it is. When you're on the other side of that, that is an incredibly difficult environment. And like they don't even get like the victimhood mentality like that you see with professional veterans, which is horrible. It makes me angry to say, but you get the point.
I mean, and then, you know, if you think about it this way, what's the first thing you do when you go to war? You build an army, right? Then you train and maintain that army, and a family unit is no different. I mean, I can't remember who originally said this, but the smallest form of government is the family, right? And if you're a leader, it's your job to make sure every motherfucker on the team is ready to fight, right? That's your job. And then to take care of yourself last. Well, if you map that shit onto the family unit, that means helping them get reset as well, or whatever else they need. And I'll tell you this, as a man, as a leader, as an alpha type, you'll get more personal healing and joy out of helping them reset than you'll ever get from just directly trying to help yourself, because that's you're biologically programmed to do that shit, right? So if you're talking about resetting these systems and stuff, circadian rhythm, limbic system, getting back to a genuinely purpose-driven life from the perspective of a male is going to include some of these things. It's definitely not going to be you being a professional victim, or like, oh, I've had it rough, a bunch of my friends died. It's like, well, a bunch of everybody's friends are dead, dude. It's like, what do you think those dead friends of yours would like the version of you that you've become to be honest. Like, do you think you're doing them any service by behaving this way? The answer is obviously no.
Agree 100%. The thing that you realize, no matter what level you served in the military, no matter what level you achieved, is a couple of years after you retire, no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
People do not care. Like, what matters is who are you now and what do you do now? So to your point of a purpose-driven life, absolutely. Like, now what? Okay, yeah, you did that, but now what? And your family is included in that, now what? You can't just sit back and wait for things to happen to you or have expectation. You got to go do it. And honestly, I mean, to say something positive about it, I think the people in the military, you know, you serve a bunch of years in some incredibly difficult environments, particularly folks that have served in the last 20 years. Like, it hasn't been easy. Like you said, like, it sucks a lot and you put up with a lot. But you also learn a lot. And if you're successful in the military, the things about you, the things within you that made you successful in the military are the same things that will make you successful in whatever you choose to do next. You just got to get off your ass and go do it. So, yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. Now, to that point, you worked in, I guess, just the tactical industry for a little while, which, is better than the other avenue, just going into contracting work and never ending, you know what I mean? Which is, I'm sure it's tempting. The temptation to to keep gunfighting probably is strong, but, what was it specifically, cause you mentioned how, you know, we collectively, and there's plenty of blame to go around, but there's no point in that. But, you mentioned how we kind of collectively don't address or even outright ignore the family unit to some degree. What made you decide to go work with the All Secure Foundation?
I mean, a few years ago, Tom, it's been more than a few now, but when Tom wrote his book, he and his wife, Jen, both wrote books that were both fantastic, but Tom wrote a book called All Secure, which the charity was named after, and he used it as a springboard and to help fund the standing up of the charity. But, Tom called me, and he basically wanted to talk to me about the book that he was getting ready to release because I was there or present for a number of things that are discussed in the book. And he was very candid about why. And one of the things that he said to me was, and we have a very similar life story in that he sort of bottomed out and almost took his life and then was fortunate enough to be around or to meet a woman, to meet a significant other that kind of helped save his life. And I lived through a very similar circumstance. I was divorced and met someone at the tail end of my career that sort of got me at rock bottom. And that person, in his case, Jen loved him for who he was in that moment. And in my case, Robin loved me for who I was in that moment. It wasn't about what I used to do. It was about what I was right then. The good and the bad, and could see the good even when things weren't good. And so a lot of Tom's story appealed to me. But the other thing he said was, you know, sometimes it takes a person to be unafraid to share the deep, dark, dirty, uncomfortable stuff to help other people heal. And I identified with that. And it sort of became my mantra as well. Like, you know what? I'm not a doctor and I don't have all the answers, but what I can tell you is where I've been and what I've been through and what I've done to get better and to recover from it. And I can also be there to support others that are going through that process. And I think that was what honestly hooked me. So when they asked me to come work for them and continue to promote this, I was ecstatic. I mean, we've helped 5,000 folks at this point with coaching and counseling, and we'll continue to do so. But it's not just the veteran, it's the spouse. And I think that's one of the things that sets us apart. It's one of the things that makes us different. And it's one of the things that makes us successful at getting people kind of through that gateway where they can take off and run on their own and not
be a victim, not be someone that that's what I used to do and all these things happen to me and boo hoo. No, fuck that. Get back on the horse. Get back on the horse as an individual. Get back on the horse as a family, and go make a difference today, tomorrow, with all of that experience that you have instead of hiding underneath it.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? That we'll, no matter how high of a level you operate at, there's still the possibility that if you don't do the right thing and maintain your mental health the right way, like, I mean, it's fucking crazy to think of the best shooters in the world falling victim to something, right? I mean, you can't imagine that. It doesn't make any sense to you. But in a lot of ways, they're more at risk than anybody. You know what I mean? It's kind of, it's a weird fucking sliding scale, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the peaks and valleys just get bigger, right? Mm. So the higher you climb, the further you have to come down. And I think that's particularly the case with special operators. I think they've worked so hard to get to a certain level. And at some point you start to identify with, yeah, man, I'm on top of the mountain, that when you fall, you really fall. But I also think that gives us a unique perspective and an ability to help other folks deal with those issues. And I think it's particularly important to not be afraid to talk about that. I mean, my community, the special operations community, the tier one side, I can tell you that every single one of us has issues. There's no such thing as a guy was strong enough mentally that it didn't affect him. If they tell you that it didn't, they're lying and they just haven't figured it out yet. But we all have had our challenges, and we can all work together to help people work through each other and to help other people work through those.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it, when you, the peaks and valleys thing. I like that. Cause you know, yeah, it's the higher you climb, the farther you're going to fall. That's for sure. But I think perspective matters. Intentionality matters. Like, you can think of it as, well, I've fallen down here and now I've got to climb my way out. Or you can think of it as like, oh, I've fallen down here. Let me look around and see who else is down here so I can help them the fuck out of here and be a goddamn man. You know what I mean? Because that's what your fucking job is.
Amen. And honestly, that I love the, I love the quote, like, do hard shit, continue to do hard shit, continue to challenge yourself mentally and physically within the scope of what's possible. But continue to do those things throughout your life, because you will forget. It doesn't matter at what level you achieved, whether you're a professional athlete or you were in the service, you can do all these great things. You will forget. You will forget when things get tough and that's not your life anymore. You will forget that you are capable of greatness, that you're capable of overcoming significant challenges. And so you constantly have to do things to remind yourself that, you know what, that's who I am. Like, it's just another challenge, and I'll work through this like I have everything else in my life.
Yeah, and I think coupling that with turning the focus off yourself, you know what I mean? Like, seeing this, again, you've got to get a couple layers off of the psychological and physiological impact of it. Like, yeah, this sucks for me now because, like you mentioned it before, and I think a lot of athletes go through this too. It's like, well, I'll never be as good at anything as I was at that. Like, you were a tier one operator. That there's no tier zero operator, right? That's like, you were one of the best shooters in the world. That's a fact. And now you're the CEO of a company, right? There's a lot of COOs of companies, frankly, right? So you have to fucking think about that and like, oh shit, I guess I'm not that dude anymore. It's like, all right, well, what was it that made you that dude though? Right? Like, back off of the specifics and think about what the traits were that allowed you to do that shit. because once you have a degree of separation from whatever it is, the pain or the trauma, you're not just like immediate, you get off the X, right? That's what we like to say. Get off the X. Once you're off the X, then be like, all right, cool. Well, that sucks, but I can either sit around here and mope about it, or I can go LGOP style, make a fire team and go fuck some shit up, right? You know, that's kind of, at the core level, that's kind of, at least from my perspective, that was a big part of our training, was to assess and then team build and then go, you know, do shit, right? I mean, that, so yeah, there's a lot of bad things happen, a lot of stress happen, but
you've got skills that nobody else has, right? So fucking use them to help people. And the doing hard shit part, I think, is kind of intrinsic to masculinity. We do stupid shit all the time to try to prove how tough we are for no fucking reason. And you and your wife, I think, are getting ready to do some stupid shit now, right? The Seven Summits thing that's going on. Like, I appreciate that you're going to do it, but there's no version of me that would ever do anything like this. I'll jump out of all the airplanes you want. I'll fucking hike and shit, but I'm not climbing goddamn mountains.
Honestly, I wouldn't do it if my spouse didn't do the thing that does with me. I think, you know, it's like you said, but to add to it, like, it's important to remind yourself that you are fortunate that you've faced the challenges that you faced, and that you've been through those things and you've overcome those things. And then once you have the realization that you can help and share that with others, and it doesn't have to be the world, right? You don't have to be a part of a veteran charity. You don't have to go save the world in some foreign country, even just with your friends and your loved ones or your spouse. When you start helping other people overcome challenges, that's the real gift, man. Like, that's the thing that feels amazing. And makes, like, the things that I get to experience with my spouse, and the reason we climb mountains and do the things that we do, is because I get as much joy from her accomplishing something that she didn't think she was capable of as I do in reminding myself that, fuck yeah, I can do that. And I'm not old and I'm not too broken and I can still do these things. But yeah, I love it. I love the reward of her doing something that she never thought she was capable of when I thought she was the entire time. But being able to share that with others, I think that's a unique perspective that folks that have served in the military have that not a lot of civilians do. And so bring that to the table.
Yeah, it's interesting. You never really, I don't know, and maybe it's youth, maybe it's naivety or something, but you never really think, well, I can't do that. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, fuck, I'll try. Why not? You know what I mean? Now, there's a big difference between getting a 300 in your PT test and climbing Kilimanjaro, for example, right? I think there's a little gap between those two things. But yeah, I mean, the principle is the same at its core.
But it also, and I think you don't have to define it with physicality either, right? Like, it could be going back to school. Mm-hmm. It could be getting a degree in something. It could be pursuing a passion, man. If you like to paint or draw, or you like to, I don't know, weld or whatever it is, knit, I don't know. But you know, not being afraid to explore those things and to set some goals for yourself and go after them, I think is absolutely important to success for the rest of your life.
And when are you guys starting this?
So we just finished. We just got home from Chile. We summited Ojos del Salado, which is the tallest volcano on planet Earth, 22,600 feet. And that's our third of the volcanic seven summits. So the tallest volcano on each of the seven continents. Of the seven summits, we've only done Kilimanjaro so far, but we've got, that's the tallest mountain on every continent. Mm-hmm. We've got more of those coming. The problem is one of the seven summits, both volcanic and regular seven summits, is Mount Elbrus, which is in Russia. Obviously, I, as a tourist, can't go to Russia anytime soon.
Yeah.
Mount Domovan is one of the tallest volcanoes in the world. It's one of the volcanic seven summits. It's in Iran. I don't think I can go visit Iran anytime soon. So we've spread it out. But, at the end of the day, it's about spending time in the wilderness with no distraction and being together and the connection that it forms. You'd be amazed if you're lucky enough to pursue a hobby with your significant other, the connection, the bond that you will form is not unlike bonds that you had with teammates in the military. Like, it's an irreplaceable thing that will never go away, and makes everyday life easy if you can tackle hard things with your significant other like that. So it really doesn't matter what the goal is. I put some stuff out there just to have something to chase while I'm still capable. But the point of it is continuing to get out, experience the world, travel new cultures, and do those things with my spouse.
So that's something you would recommend for people who are trying to, like, reconnect with their spouse, is
go find some hard shit to do together. I mean, how has it worked for you? Is there, if somebody's in a bad spot in their relationship, I think they may assume that it's just going to get worse because of the stress, right?
Yeah, it didn't for us. I mean, the first major undertaking we took was John Muir Trail. That was 3 weeks in the wilderness together. And, you know, the lead up to that was some education. I had had, I think the joke that I tell is, I know what it's like to go dig a hole and shit in the woods. Mm. Most civilians don't. My now wife did not. She had never done that. And that's a significant emotional event. So that's a horrible example, but you bring a lot of knowledge and experience that you can share with them in a healthy way and that they appreciate and they learn from. But then what I think you'll find is it evolves into, particularly when you're post-service and getting older, is, you know, I'm not always the strong one. Sometimes I'm tired. Sometimes I want to quit. Sometimes I don't want to get out of bed and go to the gym. Sometimes I don't want to climb that mountain. And because my spouse is involved in those things as well and a part of it and enjoys it, she can be the motivator. And once you learn that give and take, it affects every aspect of your life. So you become each other's cheerleaders. You become each other's support group. You become what you should be with a significant other. And I think that's what it's done for us. So for us, it was the wilderness. I think it's easy. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. It doesn't have to be climbing the tallest mountains in the world. It can just be, you know, a weekend hike. You can start small and build up to bigger things. But I think the true benefits of the wilderness are when you spend multiple days out away from distraction, particularly in today's day and age where, you know, 24 hours a day, you're bombarded by stuff. Mm. I think anything you can do where you cut all of that away and you're just focused on one another and the experience that you're having, I think is beneficial and going to make your relationship stronger, going to make you mentally stronger, and ultimately make you better at whatever you do day to day.
Yeah, it's good advice. And before we get out of here, give everybody kind of like a brief synopsis of what All Secure Foundation is and what it does.
Yeah, so All Secure is a 501(c) veteran nonprofit. 100% of the dollars that we bring in go to support active duty and veteran special operators and their spouses. We provide coaching and counseling for both active duty veteran and their spouse. In dealing with post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress injury. We don't call it a disorder anymore, and I'd appreciate it if everybody got on that bandwagon because it is something that is you can recover from. But post-traumatic stress injury, secondary post-traumatic stress injury, and just generally the trauma of war, which includes, you know, TBI and some other things. But we provide the coaching, the training, the tools to get better. To move on with your life, to move on with your family, and to be successful. Another thing that we do is we do retreats, both for veterans and for spouses, and then collective. And then several times a year, we run what we call our Camp Homefront events. A Camp Homefront event is basically a weekend where we invite in a bunch of families, couples, and we expose them to 2 days worth of various healing modalities. So we bring in experts both medically and then folks like you and I that have been through various things that do a good job at speaking about their experiences with those, but everything from psychedelics to sleep, from stellate ganglion block to mindfulness. But we bring in these SMEs to talk about those kind of in hour blocks throughout the course of the weekend. And then we bring in all the partner organizations that support those various healing modalities so that if anyone in our audience, after hearing something, identifies with it and wants to pursue one of those particular treatments, we provide them with access and the individuals to get them signed up and supported to go do those things. So, it's a really, really great organization. AllSecureFoundation.org is our website. And as you know, and as everybody involved in helping others knows, you know, resources are what make the difference. We've coached 5,000 folks at this point, and we're getting better, and we've hired more coaches, and we hope to do another 10,000 more in the next couple of years. But That takes the support of donors and people that are willing to contribute to our cause. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and to talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. I've been going back and forth with Tom for a long time on this stuff. He's the only, you guys are the only game in town for this particular thing, so far as I can tell, which is, to your point from before, it's almost shocking, to be honest, because it's so obviously an issue. But, you know, you're out there doing it. So, yeah, if you're out there and you can, you have the ability to contribute to some of this stuff, allsecurefoundation.org, go there and you can help out. If you're looking for help with some of this stuff, go to the same place. Where else should anybody go for resources or anything like that, as far as you guys go?
Yeah, on our website, we also have links to a whole slew of other resources. Like I said, unfortunately, right now, we only cater to the special operations community, current or prior. But eventually, we hope to expand into law enforcement and first responders, because that is a community that definitely needs the same level of support and deals with the same issues. Trauma is trauma, man.
Yep.
So yeah, there's a bunch of resources on our website. Conversely, if anybody has any questions, you can get me on Instagram, cvansant123 at Insta. You can get us on LinkedIn. You can get us on our website, allsecurefoundation.org. And generally, if you reach out to any one of us, you'll get a response back in about 24 hours. If we can't help you, we'll find somebody else that can.
Sweet. Well, look, thanks for coming today, man. It's been a really good conversation. I appreciate your time.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Anytime. And thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.